I did. It was a reverse auction. So the way it worked is I listed the site. Well, first it was, everything was publicly transparent. As you know, most of the sales that you do, you're fairly quiet about the financials and sensitive data. And I took the opposite approach. I published all the financials, all the key things. There's a few things I held back that might've been, you know, really easy for someone to rip off the business with, but 90% full P&L, balance sheet, all that kind of stuff. I mean, public.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I've been busy this past week doing a few interviews.
You have. I've been slacking. You've been picking up that slack and doing them all yourself. Thank you.
I think anybody who's been listening to our show knows that you're not slacking on this, that I'm just trying to play catch up here to your three episodes to everyone that I've done. But I've been catching up this week, and I'm really excited about some of the guests that we have coming up in the upcoming weeks. And one of the first ones is Andrew Uterain, who we both know well from E-commerce Fuel.
I do. You know, I tell this story often. The first time I went to an E-commerce Fuel event was in Nashville, I think, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember saying specifically, when I got back, you and I talked about it, I heard more intelligent e-commerce conversations in 24 hours than I heard in the previous 24 months. It's an exceptional group of entrepreneurs, and they help each other on a regular basis, which is incredible.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of groups out there which I have zero hesitation endorsing and have told people that they need to be a part of. If anyone listening is in e-commerce, E-commerce Fuel is a private forum that requires that you apply in order to get access to it. You have to have a business of a certain size to be able to get in. Some of the most intelligent people that we know in this space, some of the most successful people that we know in this space are members of that forum. It's a really, really good community. They have an event that they put on every year, which is one of our favorite events to go to, called E-commerce Fuel Live. So one of the things Andrew does every year, though, because he's got all these members, you know, several hundred members with successful e-commerce stores, is he surveys them and he puts together a full-on report called the State of E-commerce, or State of the Merchant. I can't remember the exact name of it. But this entire interview is he and I talking about this report, because the data in here is awesome. It's really, really cool. You get to see how fast our business is growing, what percentage of businesses are Amazon. When you get to a certain revenue size, what is the typical breakdown by channel? And one of the cool pieces of data in the report this year was what niches are growing versus what's shrinking. For example, one of the cool things that I pointed out and we talked about a little bit is men's clothing and accessories was among one of the fastest growing sectors. Conversely, women's clothing and accessories was one of the ones that was stagnant or declining. And so we go into, why is that? You know, what's going on there? Lots of really cool data in that report.
Interesting. Well, look, Andrew is a super nice guy, full of integrity and character, and the whole E-commerce Fuel group is a reflection of him, I believe. So let's just jump to it, see what he's got to say.
Absolutely. Hey, Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right. So you are joining me from a van, obviously.
Yeah, I look like a total sketchball here. It's kind of a little mobile office I have. I'm on the road with the family, and when I need to do podcasts or interviews or phone calls, I usually come out here because it's a little quieter. It's, as you know, you've got kids. It can be tough to do inside with kids, and so here we are.
I love it. You're not the first guest to actually show up in their vehicle. We had Chad Annis on a while ago, and he was in his RV. He's been doing it for 9 months. He's been just living the RV life for 9 months. But I know you're out there just kind of traveling around and on a vacation, so to speak, with your family, right?
Yeah, we're just kind of doing a little trip. We love to get out of Montana. You'll appreciate this. I mean, you're from Minneapolis. You know, the winters can get brutal up north. We're in Montana, and try to get out of town and get to some warmer climates for, you know, 2-3 months in the winter and work along the way, but try to get a little more vitamin D in the body. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, our winter's been super long here. My wife has told me that if it goes on a few more weeks, we're leaving. She doesn't know where. We're just going to go. Not move. We're just going to go somewhere. I'm going to come home and she's going to say, get in the car. So let's do this. You and I know each other from E-commerce Fuel, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself to our listeners and kind of your background and what you do.
Sure. So my background is, I try to go from the beginning as brief of a story as possible, hitting the high points. Got out of school, worked in finance for a couple of years in the kind of investment banking world and learned a lot, got a lot of great experience, but decided that I didn't want to sell my soul to the corporate world. And so quit and was looking for an opportunity to start a business. And oddly enough, got into e-commerce, starting selling CB radios. I ran that business for, a number of years, and kind of 2 years into that, started a second business selling trolling motors, another e-commerce-based dropshipping business. And a couple of years after that, I just found I was meeting a lot of people doing similar things that I was, kind of interesting, very isolated entrepreneurs in the e-commerce space, and thought, it'd be really cool if there was a community for this group of people. So I started what's called E-Commerce Fuel, which ended up kind of evolving into a community for high 6- and 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners. And so I've since sold both of those e-commerce businesses. And now my primary full-time gig is running that community, which and the ways I try to add value and our team tries to add value is through live events, which Mark, you and QuietLight have been generous enough to sponsor and support. So thank you. Through live events, through a private forum that we have, kind of a curated, vetted forum of people with experience in the space, and then through some proprietary software that we've built. So that's my story and what I do.
Yeah. And for anyone that is not familiar with E-commerce Fuel and the forum that are associated with it, really, really valuable. I don't know anybody who's a member of that forum who doesn't consider it to be one of their top resources. And then the conference that you put on every year is phenomenal. We go to a lot of conferences, absolutely love E-commerce Fuel Live. So if you're in the e-commerce space and you have a store that's 6, 7, 8 figures, I don't know where you are with your registrations or what you're doing for accepting new memberships, but definitely recommended resource.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. So every year you do a survey of the members, you perform a survey of the members of your forum, and it's the state of the merchant report. Tell me a little bit about that and how you put this report together and what it talks about.
Yeah. So I wanted to try to get a sense of what was happening with merchants in that 7-figure range, because Forbes will put out reports about the Fortune 500, and you hear these stats about Target and Amazon, and that's interesting, but it's a very different world when you're in kind of the kind of size business that I was in, that our members are in, and so every year I put it together like you mentioned, and just it's a survey of about 50 questions. This last year we had about 450 people respond. The average size of the store owner responding was about 2.3 million, and we put together a lot of stats, everything from, we put everything together from, where the people are from, what type of businesses they have, conversion rates, revenue growth, how Amazon is impacting their business, all those kind of things. So yeah, that's kind of the survey in a nutshell. And there's kind of 3 big takeaways that I can kind of go into, or if there's something else you want to talk about first, we can do that too, Mark.
Yeah. So let's go into the 3 big takeaways. And for anyone looking at this, this is freely available online at ecommercefuel.com, and we'll link to it in the show notes. And probably, I hope if I remember, I'll link to it in the email that I send out to people as well about this podcast. But lots of really good data in here. So you do this every year. You pour over the data and you take a look at what's important. What were the big takeaways for you this year?
Yeah. So the big takeaways, I'd say, for the last year, 2018, really 2017, but published 2018, was it was an incredibly strong year for growth for kind of that 7-figure store owner demographic. Revenue, year over year revenue was up 38%, and only about 11% of stores didn't see any growth at all. So I think last year, it was high 20s or 25, 26. You look at e-commerce in general, it tends to grow around that 20, 22-ish percent range. But this year was just an incredible year, really strong growth. That was one. The second thing was that Amazon was a driver for a lot of that growth. And this isn't surprising, but it's interesting to see how much Amazon is contributing to merchants' revenue. So last year, the year before this, Amazon was responsible for about 20% of overall revenue. So let's say, of someone who's doing $1 million in sales for an average store, 200,000 of that would have been generated from Amazon. This year, it was up to 28%. So this year, 280,000 of their $1 million in revenue was coming from Amazon. So Amazon's definitely making up a bigger portion of merchants' pie. The counterpoint to that, though, is Amazon also is generating more headaches and complaints for people. So we looked at the number of people every year who say that, we asked them what their biggest challenge and struggle in their business is. And this last year, the number of people who listed Amazon as the biggest struggle, or one of them, was up almost 3x. And this wasn't just people complaining that Amazon was killing their business. Let's say maybe they were a dropshipper and, all my sales are dying because Amazon is stealing them. That was only a small fraction, probably 20% of people complaining. The vast majority of them were complaining about things like Amazon's getting more competitive. I'm too reliant on it. I'm tired of dealing with some of their terms of service and policies. So things like that. So Amazon's more opportunity to grow your revenue, but also there's additional overhead and burden with that. And then finally, kind of the last big takeaway was that conversion rates increased dramatically across the board for all sellers. The rates were up about 25%, you know, year over year. So last year, conversion rate on average was about 2.10%. This last year, it jumped up to, I think, 2.664%, right in that range. And, you know, that was probably the most surprising stat for me for the whole survey, because, you know, it's difficult enough to bump up your conversion rate by, 25% across a single site, but to see that across a group of 450 stores on average. And I thought maybe what we were seeing was that you were seeing more people shift to manufacturing or private labeling, which tends to have a much higher conversion rate than, let's say, drop shipping. But I saw that conversion rate boost across all different store types, from drop shipping to just reselling to manufacturing. And so hard for me to explain. I hypothesize that perhaps that's our community is getting a little bigger and merchants are maybe getting a little more advanced. The economy in the U.S. particularly has done well this last year. Whatever the reason, we saw a big bump there. So those are probably the three biggest takeaways that I had from the report.
All right. So one thing that I've always found interesting about your report is the percentage of sales that Amazon takes with some of your larger stores. What did the data show? If you remember offhand, I don't know if you have the report in front of you, but what did the data show from some of your larger stores and how much they were actually getting from Amazon?
Yeah. So let me see here if we actually calculated that this year. So I don't think we actually, we measured a couple of things. We didn't get the actual revenue from, you know, what percentage of the revenue Amazon was generated by stores that had a lot on Amazon. But what we did measure was kind of revenue growth for different stores if they weren't selling on Amazon, if they were selling on Amazon, or where Amazon was 60% of their revenue. So when you break it down that way, Amazon, stores that aren't selling at all on Amazon, they're growing at about 30%. Stores that are selling a little bit on Amazon, someone, are growing at about 41%. And stores where Amazon is, makes up 60% plus of their revenue, they're growing at 51%. So you're definitely seeing the fastest growing stores definitely have, a very high component of Amazon revenue to them. And the same thing too for income growth. It follows kind of lockstep with the income that people are seeing as well.
Right. And as I just kind of go through this here, one chart that I see is the Amazon dominance trends. Amazon as a store's number one channel, looks like you have 26% there.
Yep. So that's 26% of merchants listed Amazon as their number one channel, up from 20% last year.
See, that number right there actually is almost staggering, because it seems like with every store I see, they may have started offline with a website and then they moved over to Amazon and Amazon took up all of their revenue. This is showing what 74% are still have other channels as their dominant channels, or maybe they're just so diversified. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a lot of our members are, I would say probably 3/4 of them, for whatever reason, they have a very good presence off of Amazon as well. And maybe, I don't know if that's the kind of our just culture, or part of it's due to kind of some of our screening and who we, kind of bring into the community. But I think it's that might be more of a bias of our community as to maybe just a general market thing. Cause you see, as you said, a lot of, it's probably under what you would expect to see. So I'm not exactly sure. I think part of that might just be the demographic of our community reporting in there.
Sure. Well, I think it's fascinating. I think it's useful data, especially for people that have e-commerce businesses and are thinking that they want to make Amazon their pure play. I've talked to a few business owners that have said, well, I'm going to focus my attention on Amazon because that's where the money is. And why would I take away my other efforts from Amazon into something that may not make as much money? But it appears as if you do have a number of stores that are doing that 7- and 8-figure revenue levels without Amazon being that dominant channel.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what a lot of the savvy merchants that I see in our community doing, and kind of the philosophy they take with Amazon, is it's hard to pass up free money and easy money. And granted, Amazon's getting harder, but still it's a pretty powerful and compelling opportunity even in 2018. But their mindset much of the time is use Amazon as a way to help launch a brand, to help generate some cash flow, and then use the momentum you can generate from Amazon, use the cash you can generate from Amazon to help build your off Amazon, your own .com, your own web store presence, because ultimately that's an asset that you own, and it's much less risky than being beholden to Amazon, going forward. So I think that's the strategy a lot of those bigger merchants are taking.
Yeah, that, and that's absolutely what I see as well with Amazon, is that the launch process tends to be, you end up testing your products and being able to launch a brand so much faster because of the size of the marketplace. Let's talk real quick about the software. You guys have a very cool part of your community where your community rates software that they're using and gives feedback. So you have like a star rating, and if somebody wants to find like a good shopping cart or what shopping cart they should use, or maybe help desk software, you guys have a whole directory of software within your community that rates that, right?
We do. Yeah. And so part of it is the ratings, like you mentioned. Another part of it, and maybe more telling, is the usage stats. So we have about 1,000 members in our community, and our software goes out and crawls all of our members' stores on a weekly basis and uses an integration with BuiltWith to be able to tell what all of their members are using. So we can tell in real time that, oh, you know, 44% of our members are on Shopify this year versus, you know, 37% last year, whatever it is. So we can get stats on what people are using, but also our members rate the software as well. So we get a sense of what's, you know, what people like and what they don't.
That's pretty cool. So what software would you say is really a software that people should be paying attention to in 2018? What's really been growing quite a bit over the past year?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, sorry, shopping carts, because those are the biggest ones, and this probably isn't going to come as a surprise to people, but Shopify just dominates in this area. You look at that 1,000-ish members area in our community, and I think probably about, you know, 430 of them, so call it, you know, over 40%, close to 45% use Shopify. And the number of people we've seen switch to Shopify from carts like Magento over the last, you know, 2-3 years has just been unbelievable. They've done a really good job capturing that market share. So on the shopping cart side, that's one I'd say. The other three that we highlight in the state of the merchant: email marketing. MailChimp is the number one. They've got 282 out of our top 1,000, and Klaviyo is 217 out of our top 1,000. So both of those are kind of the leaders there, fairly close. Help desks, we've got Zendesk is the top. They use 61 out of about 1,000 use them, but Help Scout's pretty close behind there, and they get slightly better ratings. And I would be surprised if we didn't see a flip-flop of that, seeing Help Scout come to the top over the next year. And then for product reviews, Shopify, partially based on the fact that when people use Shopify, Shopify's built-in review system is the most popularly used. Yotpo used to be that number one spot, but they dropped to number three this last year. Partially, they've got great functionality, but I think a lot of the kind of experience that I've heard from store owners is just their pricing has gotten quite a bit more expensive. And so you've seen companies like Stamp.io, who offer similar functionality at a much lower price point, come in, and they've jumped up significantly this year up to the number two spot. So those are kind of some of the trends I'm seeing. Full disclosure, we've had, Klaviyo is a sponsor of our podcast. Yotpo used to sponsor us, and Shopify has sponsored us in the past. So.
Right. So that might be influencing a bit. I want to share something with you, because I think you'll actually appreciate this. I'm working with a client right now. I'm going to be hopefully listing his business here soon. Tell me the last time you heard this. He's on Yahoo Shopping Cart.
We'll occasionally get somebody in the forums who will say, hey, I'm on Yahoo Stores. Should I migrate, or how do I migrate? And it's always an entertaining thread to read, because there's a few of those people left.
Yeah. So when you told me that, I said, well, I haven't heard that for at least like 5 or 6 years. It used to be the gold standard that everybody used.
Well, if he's looking to sell it, that's probably a decent positioning standpoint for someone who's comfortable with migrations and redesigns to say, hey, I'm sure there's some incredibly converting Yahoo store sites out there, but you can probably modernize and probably get an uptick with conversion with a rebrand. That's a nice value add if you're going to buy this thing.
Yeah, this is an interesting listing, which I'm sure a lot of people will be looking at once it comes out. But let's talk a little bit about Magento and the fact that they're seeming to hurt a little bit. My only foray into e-commerce, and I wrote a blog post on this years ago about how it was kind of a disaster for myself. My foray into e-commerce, I went with Magento, and my goodness, I had so much trouble with it. What do you think the problem is with Magento? Are they just losing out to Shopify, or are there problems that are kind of inherent in that shopping cart?
I think it really depends on your use case. Magento is incredibly powerful. They've got a decent ecosystem for a lot of their extensions, but it's just so complex. Like I've been on multiple shopping carts: SendCart, Shopify, Magento, and by far the hardest one to customize was Magento. Even just changing layouts around on the homepage was a nightmare. And so I think the problem is that it it's very powerful, but it's much more complex than your average store owner, especially in the seven figures, is going to need when you look at the benefit of having full customization versus the benefit of ease of administration and upkeep and maintenance. Shopify or another hosted solution just makes more sense. And I think that there, when you think about if you do actually need to have access to the code base to be able to fully customize your site, which is definitely, there are definitely stores out there that being able to create custom functionality, do you be able to put together custom integrations that you can't with maybe some hosted solutions if the APIs don't allow it. If you need 100% customization, there are other carts out there that maybe are a little lighter weight, aren't quite as heavy and resource intensive and hard to customize as Magento, that are probably a better option for people in that seven-figure range.
Yeah. All right, cool. I want to go to the first point that you brought up, and that is that revenues are up across the board from everything that you're seeing, which, you know, this is something that we're seeing across the board as well with the business that we're selling, right? The businesses we're selling, the values just seem to be going up and up and up. And I don't know if this is a maturation of the industry, of just businesses that have been around longer and now are reaching more scale, or really what's behind it. You make a point in your report here about, where is it? Dealt with the margins, the gross margins seem to hold up as well. Can you comment a little bit on the margins that you're seeing on e-commerce stores? I think the net margins here, we're seeing gross margin average of 39.2% and net margins of 17.4%. What has the trend historically been with that? And over the past year with these revenues growing, that's all stayed level?
Yeah. So this is something that surprised me. With how much Amazon is growing and how much Jeff Bezos loves to talk about, you know, our margin being his opportunity, you would expect that margins to come under more pressure this year. And what I found was that they didn't slide as much as I thought they would have. They came down a tiny bit, but not very much. Like you mentioned, the gross margin this year was 39.2%. I think last year it was a little bit higher, maybe like 39.7 or 8%. So it slid a tiny bit, but not much. And same on the net margin. You know, this year it was 17.4, and I think last year it was maybe 17.8 or 9. So it came down a little bit, but not nearly as much as I was expecting to see. And if you look at the margins of, you know, stores who are selling primarily on their own platform versus that are primarily selling on Amazon, this might be interesting for people. The gross margin for people primarily selling on Amazon is 36% versus 40.4% selling by their own store. And you might expect that because Amazon takes a fee and you don't have to pay that fee off the top for your own store. But even when you account for all the fees and the advertising that you maybe have to pay on your own store versus Amazon, you still get a slightly better margin selling on your own store, 17.7% after all said and done versus Amazon, which is 16.6. So that's kind of how the margins broke down this year.
That's fascinating. Something that I think will be of interest to a lot of our buyers is this average growth by business model and the format. So obviously with e-commerce, you have a lot of different ways that you can do e-commerce. And so I'll get buyers sometimes say, hey, I want to buy a business. What are you thinking of? E-commerce, what type of e-commerce? And I don't know. Like, okay, well, you have to understand, like with any commerce, there's some significant differences.
Yep.
Yeah. Dropshipping had growth of 32.7%, reselling 27.6%. I'm actually a little surprised to see more growth in the dropshipping category than in the reselling category.
I was too. I was very surprised to see that. And one of my guesses about why that was, again, it's just a guess, but this last year, Shopify bought Oberlo, I believe that's how you pronounce it, the integrator with AliExpress. And you kind of have seen a significant uptick in people using that drop shipping from China via AliExpress model this year, over the last 18 months. And I wonder if that part of that is responsible for that. Because looking back at last year's report, if I remember correctly, dropshipping was, you know, had the lowest growth. I think reselling beat it out. So I wonder if that is what potentially changed the tides on things. So
yeah, possible. And in all fairness, you list here the percentage of stores that are also have flat and declining revenues. Mm-hmm. And dropshipping seems to be just kind of split right down the middle here. You have 33% basically growing, 33% that are flat or declining. So they're also, although they're, you know, doing okay, there's a number that are also in that kind of hurting category.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. About a third of dropshipping businesses are either flat or in decline. So last year, again, surprisingly, it's I was seeing the numbers, having a dropshipping business myself. One of the reasons I sold that business was because I saw the headwinds with dropshipping. I think it's getting much more difficult with Amazon and with some other forces. And last year, State of the Merchant 50% plus of drop shipping stores were either flat or declining. And that's, you know, come down significantly where you're, you know, only 33% are in that category now. So I think part of that is potentially Oberlo. I think part of that is just an improved year. But you look at the stores in the other categories that are kind of in rough shape, either stalled out or shrinking, and you see much smaller numbers, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20% for all the other categories, reselling, private label, manufacturing. So yeah, so definitely some stronger areas, I think, still dropshipping, and there are still dropshipping businesses, I think, that work well. It's just a much harder nut to crack, and you really have to be able to have a good way to add value outside of the product, because you're reselling a commodity that other people can come in and sell easily as well. So it's just trickier to get right, I think.
Right. And I think there are some industries, back when the short foray I had into e-commerce, we were doing gun safes. You know, it's going to be not very realistic to warehouse gun safes in most cases, unless you're doing very large volumes, just because the shipping costs are so high, regardless of what you're doing.
Right.
So there are some businesses that lend themselves to that. I think it should be no surprise to anybody that private label and manufacturing seem to be the biggest winners, with 43 and 42%. So on average, 43% in both categories were growing, and only 21 to 15% of those categories respectively were shrinking. So
yeah. Just to clarify, Mark, that's, so for private label and manufacturing, that's those actual, the revenue growth rates per year. So private label will be growing at like 43% revenue.
Oh, okay.
And manufacturing growing at about 42% per year.
Okay, good. Good clarification. Fastest growing categories. This is something that we get asked all the time, of what businesses are hot now, like what should I be looking for if I'm a buyer looking to buy something. And at the top of your list, pet supplies, which isn't a huge surprise. Whenever we get a business that deals with pets, man, I think just flies off the shelf when you get so many inquiries on that. But I'm a little surprised about food.
Yeah, and I'll put a little disclaimer on here. We had 450 people respond. You break down, you know, let's say 20 or 30 categories. We do not have as robust a data set as I would love. And I imagine that if we had 5,000, I'm sure that these numbers might be, you know, a little bit different. So take these with a little bit of, you know, a grain of salt. But if we had, you know, almost no data points, you know, these aren't coming off two or three businesses, they're coming off, you know, at least 9 or 10 or more businesses. So, but yeah, food is on there. And I've seen kind of anecdotally a handful of businesses, you know, doing well in the food space over the last year. So that was a little surprising, but yeah, definitely made the list. It was growing at about 56% year over year. And again, another caveat for this is, again, our stores are, you know, in the smaller, you know, in that high 6-7 figure range, a lot of them. And so you're probably going to see higher growth rates here than you would, you know, just across the board for any businesses, but still strong showing for food.
Yeah. And probably one of the most odd pieces of data that I've seen in this report. And again, I'm focusing a lot on this one category because I think it's going to be interesting for a lot of our buyers. Men's clothing, thumbs up. Women's clothing, not growing nearly as fast. It's an interesting disparity.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge gap, 53% men's clothing and accessories versus 28% in women's clothing and accessories. And I think part of that is just, women's fashion, I think, is just a more saturated market, just traditionally. And I think you're starting to see more interesting kind of men's apparel come out, especially direct to consumer men's apparel. So, and yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, almost growing twice as fast, because I just think there's more room there. There isn't as much competition. There's still, I mean, obviously it's, you know, it's your apparel. It's not an easy place to be in, but men's versus women, I think men's probably is a much easier place to make money right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, last bit that I'm going to do with the state of e-commerce, and we're coming up on the clock here pretty quickly. I think this is probably the funniest question I've seen anybody ask in a survey, but your favorite entrepreneur, how did you select these four entrepreneurs? And the four that you selected, just that anyone listening, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Mark Cuban, and Jeff Bezos, some of those make sense. How did you select these four?
Well, I got to have Bezos in there, right? Because he's the, you know, the king of e-commerce. But the other, I was just trying to come up with four well-known billionaires, the idea being who would, you know, what billionaire would you want to have lunch with? And just off the top of my head, the ones that came to mind that were, you know, worth $1 billion at least easily and kind of just came to mind quickly were those four. So I put those in there.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised Elon Musk didn't win by a larger margin. So
yeah, he won. I mean, you almost 30%. You know, Richard Branson was second with 25, Cuban 23, and Bezos, surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, given this is an e-commerce survey, and you know, some people in here, although helping out others as well, was Bezos with 22.2. So
I'm not surprised at all. I was really hoping, but I think we aren't going to get to it this time. So maybe we can do a future episode. I was really hoping to talk a little bit about your experience in selling your own businesses, your own e-commerce businesses, and what that was like, because you self-sold those. You didn't use a broker at all for those. And I think the first one you did, didn't you do a public auction with that first one?
I did. It was kind of strange. And I think you were kind enough to reach out to me after that and give me some tips and talk to me about it in a real gracious way. I did. It was a reverse auction. And so the way it worked is I listed the site. Well, first, everything was publicly transparent. As you know, most of the sales that you do, you're fairly quiet about the financials and sensitive data. And I took the opposite approach. I published all the financials, all the key things. There's a few things I held back that might have been, you know, really easy for someone to rip off the business with, but 90% full P&L balance sheet, all that kind of stuff, I made public. And so that was one part. The second part was I did it as a reverse auction. And so the price started at $185,000. And then every week it would drop by $10,000 until somebody decided they wanted to buy it. And I had someone, I think, come in at the first week before it even dropped and pick it up. So it was kind of a very unorthodox way to sell a business. And I'll be the first one to say, I think I lucked out on getting a great buyer from the outset, that we worked well together and closed the deal. It very much could have blown up in my face. But yeah, a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. Again, if somebody wants to look at that, you can do a search on Google for e-commerce fuel and selling e-commerce business. I believe that'll actually come up in the search results, if I'm not mistaken. Or we can probably make it easier and link in our show notes over to that post.
I'll send a link for the show notes. And also, if you just Google e-commerce fuel reverse auction or reverse auction trollingmotors.net, that was the name of the business, it'll pop up as well.
That's right. I remember that. And I emailed you. And I mean, it was completely selfish motives on my part. I just wanted to get it in front of your audience. So... But all right, so you've got a lot of really cool resources available on e-commerce fuel. Obviously, there's the forum, which is you have to apply for in order to get into, so you know that you're going to get high quality members there. You guys also have a job board that you release, and we get this question so often from people who buy a site and want to find some good competent help. And I don't usually recommend anything to people, but you guys recently started up a job board.
We did, yeah. That something we saw was kind of a gap in the market, and also, just like you said, something that our members were having a hard time with was finding a really good quality e-commerce talent. And our job board is focused on e-commerce directors or managers, so kind of high level, people that can run an entire operation for an owner, as well as exceptional marketers, PPC, email marketing, things like that, and exceptional customer service reps. So people that are really good on, customer service over the phone or email or chat. So that's our job board, those are the positions we really focus on and trying to build a community, a job board that's healthier on that, so that, if you run a store, you know where you can go to get in front of an audience of people looking for those positions. And if you're looking to get into the e-commerce world, it's a great place to go to be able to find an opportunity, hopefully to get plugged in. And you can actually find that at ecommercefuel.com/jobs is where the job board is. So
you're going to owe me a lot of links, and I'm going to send them all on the show notes. So
Mark, I will happily send you as many links as you publish. I bet that won't be a problem.
Of course. This has been awesome. The State of the Merchant report. This is your second year doing it. Is that right?
Second year doing it. Yep. Hope to do it every year. And this is the second year.
I know it's a lot of work to put together, but there's a few things I look forward to. This is one of those things I look forward to. I think there's actually really good data and insights in this report. Anybody that's looking to buy, or anyone that's in the e-commerce space in general, this is something that you want to check out for sure. If you are not familiar with e-commerce fuel, I would definitely recommend checking them out. And I know I'm completely endorsing you. This is not something we normally do, but I really do believe in what you're doing over there at e-commerce fuel. I know so many members there that they've become friends of our company and personal friends as well. So I like to vouch for things that I think will actually help people. And honestly, your group is out there helping a lot of people in the space.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the kind words, Mark. And one thing I wanted to mention just on the State of the Merchant, if you're a data geek and you love diving into numbers, or you're smarter than me, which is almost certainly the case, and you want to pull out some more insights from this, we make all of the data just openly available. So you can go to the webpage for this post and download the full data set. So yeah, by no means, a stats major, or I try to do the best I can, but there's insights you can pull out of it, we do make the whole data set available for people. So
yeah, and if you pull out any insights, send an email over to Andrew, just let him know. I'm sure you'd love to see it.
I'd love to hear about him. Yeah, please do.
Cool. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on. I hope to have you on sometime in the future. Really, really appreciate it.
Mark, thanks for letting me, you know, the invitation and for the support that you've given to our fans and our community over the years. I appreciate that as well.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, enjoy that vacation.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.